yeah, check out this great new thing that we're developing. Da, 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 da. Oh, cool. Someone's going to go live. Oh, you know, 12 to 18 months, maybe.
Maybe. We've got a couple customers committed. Yeah, but when are they going to be on an airplane? Yeah, 12 to 18 months, maybe. Hey, it happens when it happens, all right?
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with host Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined by Seth Miller this week for episode 408. I think you titled this one, Seth, Winter is Coming.
Winter is coming. Winter is here, in fact.
Foz is going to join us in a bit, but you want to correct something from last week?
I was an idiot. Area code 407 is Orlando, not Fort Lauderdale, and I am, you know, just mortified to claim that I'm from Florida.
I was going to say, do you have to give up your Florida card in that case? You get the area code wrong? Is that what happened?
Is that all it took? I would have done it so long ago.
Oh, my parents are there in Florida right now, and it's kind of funny to hear them talk about it. They're like, "Yeah, everybody drives 80 here. I guess it's because they're all from New York." I was like, "What are you talking about?"
No,
they just drive 80 because it's Florida.
Most people from New York don't drive. Well, most people from New York City don't drive. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Plenty of people from New York drive, but so that's my mistake from last week, and I'm sure there were others as well. But
unforgivable.
So it goes. I'm just going to move on from that. But more importantly, the IATA winter season started on October 30th. So last Sunday, the Saturday-Sunday switch, the northern winter season has started. And that means for a lot of international routes get launched or schedules adjust or slots adjust.
Yeah.
And so that's always fun to see happen. There's a couple super interesting bits on that. My personal favorite is at JFK. For the last two-ish years now, I guess, the airport, JFK, is regulated, it's slot-controlled, right? So you have to use it or lose it,
yep.
Rules on the slots. We've talked about this a little bit over the past couple of years, but has exempted everybody, and then as of a year ago was only exempting international airlines. As of, you know, now this past Sunday, there are no exemptions on slot usage rules at JFK.
So Aeroflot losing theirs?
So Aeroflot seems very likely to be about to lose its slots. We saw that happen at Heathrow, which still had some exceptions, but not enough, right? I think it was at a 70-30 or 75-25.
Yep.
So Aeroflot lost those slots. I think JetBlue got one of them and maybe some other people. But so that's going to be an issue there. But Aeroflot at JFK, also interesting at JFK, all the Chinese airline. Right? So there's still some service happening in and out of JFK on the Chinese airlines, but way less than, you know, the 2019 version. For example.
Yeah.
And so that's one where I'm wondering if this is going to have unintended consequences. But also, you know, if you're JFK, like, yeah, we want international trips.
Yeah.
And I've got some interest in the bonus topics. We've got another vaguely interesting China JFK story, but we'll save that for later.
Yeah, you have to stick around for that one. So, I mean, talking about China, right, from JFK, Xiamen, I'm guessing airlines, they haven't been operating any flights that I've seen. Maybe you've got schedules pulled up. I don't know.
Yeah, the only currently scheduled operation is China Eastern.
Really? Wow.
And
the China Airlines not operating. China Airlines isn't operating anything.
Not that I see for October.
Wow.
I think China Airlines. I'll double check. Yeah. So in 2019, China Airlines ran 113. This is both directions.
So because that's Taiwan, right? China Airlines is Taiwan.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. So, China Airlines had daily, but then China Southern had 42 departures from JFK. Hainan had 22, Xiamen had 13, and China Eastern had 60.
And what about Air China?
Air China did not have any JFK departures.
And really?
Is that possible?
I don't think so. That's the one I was actually curious about because, I mean, I think Taiwan...
Air China.
Yeah,
sorry. Yes, I'm sorry. Air China had dailies, double daily as well. That's the 57 I saw that's not China Airlines.
Gotcha.
I'm searching only for destination China, which obviously wouldn't show flights to Taiwan in... scheduling system. So
that's kind of wild to me.
194 departures down to 17 or 14 and this year, and like that's a lot to lose.
Yeah. So who takes these slots, you think? United?
Some of them are ill-timed. So remember that I think a couple of the China flights run in the middle of the night departures, like 2 a.m., 3 a.m. departures out of JFK. But, and you know, 180 sounds like a ton, but that's only six a day.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a lot, but like, is that, you know, is six enough for United? Even assuming they were all at good times, like probably not enough for United to restart service. It's only 3-3.
Yeah.
And they said 2-2 wasn't enough. I don't think 3-3 would be. So But yeah, those slots are potentially coming back. I think Aeroflot was it 1 or 2 daily?
I think it's 2 daily. It was 3, yeah, because they had an A330 too. They did
in October of last year. So that would have been a summer schedule. Let's see what, you know, or F2019, November. Yeah, they dropped down to double daily in the winter, but those two will go away. That's the other thing, is the slots are winter and summer. So if by some miracle Russia is flying to the United States again by the summer, they might have summer slots, but not winter slots.
Gotcha.
When that rolls around. So yeah, the slots thing at JFK could be interesting. It's sort of not enough to really drive things, but also could be pretty fun.
Yeah. New routes, other new routes, right? United, San Francisco, Brisbane started.
Yeah.
Kind of cool.
It is. That was an interesting one. Apparently United is talking up, is using it to hype the Virgin Australia partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And talking how much feed they're expecting to get there and how strong that's going to be and take advantage of the feed. And all I can think of is, no, you're taking advantage of the fact that airline went Chapter 11 and sold off all, or bankrupt, whatever, reorganization, and sold off all of its long-haul planes.
Yeah.
Where, like, it used to feed itself, and I guess now it's feeding you. But I wonder how much that service is going to be beyond demand versus, you know, feed versus local traffic to Brisbane.
Interestingly enough, I have a coworker who is Australian. Well, his wife's Australian. And he's looking to travel to Perth next year, early next year.
Cool.
And was going to do some reward stuff, willing to pay a decent amount of miles for it. The best options were through Singapore.
I believe that.
And they United was not hyping. He even looked at cash fares. United was not hyping up the Virgin Australia partnership really at all. He was hoping for, like, you know, a Sydney, Perth on Virgin Australia or something. Couldn't find it. So
yeah.
his best options are go through Asia, which I find surprising. Because if United's hyping this up so much, it doesn't really look like it's coming to fruition.
Well, so Sydney to Perth is a tough market in general.
Yeah.
Let's start with that. I mean, it runs 12 times a day, but you've got Jetstar does it daily. Qantas 3.5, Tiger Airways. I thought that was gone. That's the old Virgin Atlantic, Virgin Australia.
Yeah,
I thought they put that out of business. Oh, so I'm still looking at 2019. Sorry.
You know, you just need to get a handle on your data. All right.
Yeah. So Jetstar does 1.5 dailies. Qantas does 6, and Virgin Australia does 2.5.
Yeah.
Or 3.5. So like, there's definitely 4.5. I can almost do. There's some flights there, but its capacity on that market is down, and that's a premium market.
Yeah. Right, Qantas, I mean, it's a five and a half hour flight.
So. Yeah, longer than some U.S. transcons, I feel like, so, or close. So, all right, that's the one. I mean, Auckland-Perth is the one where Air New Zealand had to bring in Wamos as a wet lease to fly 330s. Listening to the CEO spin that as a good thing for passengers, because at least they can operate it versus not operating it at all, is sure interesting. Last week at the conference I was at. But
so, I mean, San Francisco-Brisbane. Brisbane is in Queensland, northern, eastern Australia, right? It's not a huge market to me. Like, I mean, it's a big city. It's not a huge city, but it's a big city. It's not Sydney. It's not Melbourne, but it's big. It seems like an interesting market to put a 789 on to me. Is that simply because it's the one that can make it? Or is there actual economics here that we just don't understand?
As opposed to what?
Oh, I was thinking like a 788, like something that's actually thin, right?
Yeah. I think the trip costs of a 788 versus a 789 on the super long ones like that are pretty close to the same.
Mm, gotcha.
And so it becomes a blend of cargo capacity and then premium versus main cabin mix.
That's a good point, right? The premium cabin amount on the 788 is much less.
And the 788, like, it's smaller, but it's because it's a shrink of the design.
Mm-hmm.
The 789 is sort of the optimal economics, from what I understand. Like, that you don't save quite as much as you think you should with the 788. So, gotcha. Especially for the ultra long haul flights.
Gotcha. Makes sense. And then the other weird route is Air Canada, London Heathrow to Mumbai. I think I brought this up on a previous episode.
You're going to fly it, aren't you?
I was planning on it, but I can't find it now on the schedule. So, I don't know what's going on.
should be there.
Yeah, I can't find it anymore. But that's an interesting one. This is being done because are they having trouble running Toronto to Mumbai?
Well, no, Russia overflight makes a lot of things hard.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons that it's being discussed. I think it was probably in the offing before that, but...
You think so? Just because of COVID?
Yeah. I think there's a huge India demand. So extending more traffic into India, I think, was probably part of the idea. But maybe not. Maybe it was only since, you know, the invasion. It's pretty quick to get things moving, but...
Yeah. I mean, and I think they have rights to carry.
Yeah, they have Fifth Freedom rights, so you can carry passengers. The other thing to consider on that route is... India, and we can talk about this a little. We talked a little bit about this with Emirates last week, and I got, you know, there's an Emirates bit in this one as well. India's bilaterals, excuse me, we talked about Turkish last week, often limit the total number of seats and the number of frequencies for airlines flying between India and whatever foreign country they have the treaty with.
Yeah.
And I believe the UK and Indian Airlines are tapped out.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay.
Or at least those that are currently operating, right? New airlines keep threatening to launch service. Hans Air is the latest one that wants to run from Birmingham to secondary cities. If it can get things sorted out. So there's a few things going on there, but I think that's probably part of it in terms of getting access. But with the Freedom Rights, they don't have those same caps. Sorry, that's
finished. So they can fill the seat.
Yeah.
And be just fine. It's not like they're like, oh, we can only sell half the planes.
Or we can only run it a few days a week or anything else. Right? Like, Emirates is transitioning its Bangalore service to A380s, but as part of that had to cut a couple other frequencies because it's capped out on total number of seats it can fly into India.
Oh, interesting.
So I guess cutting frequency somewhere else, but some interesting bits there.
I'm gonna go on a tangent, and we can talk about this more in the bonus if you want. But I'm like torn, right? I'm no longer gonna be flying Heathrow to India. I have to go a different week, so I'm gonna have to come from Portland. And I've got a bunch of options. I'm thinking about cost. It's paid business. Do you fly Emirates? Do you fly Singapore Airlines from the West Coast? Singapore is probably the shortest trip, honestly. Maybe going via like the Middle East is close. But it's just like this toss-up of like, what do you do? I would rather have something. I don't want to connect in India particularly just because of connection times, international terminals to domestic terminals, yada, yada, yada. I would rather connect outside of India into Bangalore directly. But who do you fly? Like, how do you make a decision? Like, if it's just based on cost and I go with the cheapest one, I think the cheapest one is Qatar right now.
Yeah, Dubai is, Portland to Bangalore, Dubai is actually shorter total distance than Singapore.
Okay.
And putting aside that you have to connect in San Francisco or Seattle either way.
Yep.
And I assume Qatar is about the same. You know, how do I decide? A blend of price, schedule, and geopolitical implications and comfort and timing, right? I mean, like, I agree with you connecting in India from the U.S. generally stinks. The flights get in too late to catch an onward flight the same day. They usually get in around, like, 9 o'clock, I think. And so there's no, like, 11 p.m. onward flight that's worth that you can get.
Yeah. I was thinking about coming back. I wouldn't mind it as much, right? Like connecting on like a, there's like an 11 p.m. flight from Bangalore or 10 p.m. flight from Bangalore to Delhi and then Delhi to Chicago leaves at like 1 a.m. That's not bad. Like 3 hours, I can do that. That's not, that's 8 hours going the other direction.
With an overnight.
And I'm just like, I don't want to hang out in the Delhi airport.
You don't want to hang out in the airport. By the time you get to the hotel and deal with everything, it also stinks. You end up, I mean, when I've done it, you end up taking the second or third flight, not the first flight in the morning. No, like on purpose. You sleep, take the extra sleep. But they run the flights pretty frequently.
Yeah, yeah. Just during the daylight hours.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to fight with booking agents to get that to price. You know, I would say if the other question is like, what time are you going to land? Right. Mm-hmm. Like, does the Singapore flight have a decent timing into Bangalore? Is it also a 3 a.m. thing?
Actually, it's actually like a 10 p.m. arrival.
Yeah, so that's not bad. You can get in, get to your hotel, and collapse.
Yeah.
Right, that's not so terrible. When I was talking about trips, I was only looking at total distance traveled, but not actual total travel time. So
it's about 22 hours in Singapore, I think. And Qatar was close. I think it was like 23, maybe. Yeah. It's like a slightly longer layover in Doha. So I don't know. It's just like one of those things. And it's like, do I even care about points and miles and all that crap? No. At this point, I'm just kind of like, I just want to get there, get this over with, get back.
Yeah.
Speaking of business, one of our questions from a listener was, is the market currently primed for an all business class configuration comeback?
Right, and this was sort of triggered by the conversations we've heard from the US carriers as well as the European carriers talking about how premium demand is up transatlantic for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And right, that's the ExoJet, SilverJet, I forget some of the names of the other ones. But those were the markets where they were trying to get in. I mean, you could argue La Compagnie is still doing it. So, haven't heard much from them in terms of how great demand has been, but they've still been in business. So, we'll trust that it's doing okay. It is an interesting question. I think one of the bigger challenges there is what planes do you?
Yeah.
And how far can you go?
Yeah. I mean, I think like, could this be one of those things where it's like the market that you actually need this on, London, Paris, as you go further east, you don't have the plane range. / economics.
Yeah. And, right. Like La Compagnie was doing 757s and now have some 321, I think, Neos.
Yeah.
And the 321 Neo definitely can make transatlantic. If you go all business, seats are heavier, but you have 100 fewer people on board. Like you have some balancing there. So you can make it, I think. I mean, they were running Nice, but I think they did the 75 for that because the 321s didn't have it yet. or the Neo didn't have quite those legs.
Mm.
But, right, like, the XLR would be great for that sort of thing.
Yep.
If you can get one, but those are at least 2024 deliveries, and, you know, it's not going to be Q1. I think Airbus says something, Q2 or Q3 maybe, at the earliest, so...
Yeah, I mean, and how are you, like, can you justify that, like, 2-3 years out, right? So if you...
You can't.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at it...
Someone could, but not...
Well, if I'm looking at it, and be like, well, if I can't get the plane to run until 2023, 2024, do I know what the market's going to be like? No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I mean...
You and I are obviously too conservative to start an airline, so...
I mean, maybe if you could find some 757s. Maybe you could find some 757s, and you could do it.
Yeah, well, I mean, ask Northern Pacific.
Well, I mean, maybe they need to get rid of some now.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Northern Pacific Railroad is suing them, by the way, for the name.
It's not having a good run of it, are they?
Did we talk about their Saipan thing? We did last
week. We did, yeah, yeah. Okay. Has there been any changes to their tune?
No action there.
Lovely. Iberia ran out of business class seats. A lot of business class questions and problems here. How do you run out of seats?
Ask the supplier. They literally, so we noticed this, actually, one of our listeners, Ben, noticed this a couple weeks ago and asked me about it, because he was trying to book a flight, and it was loaded Madrid to Mexico City, or vice versa, in an all-Y configuration. And we're like, no, that can't be, it must be an error, it must be a typo, we don't see that configuration load anywhere, I couldn't find anything about it. It turns out that the newest plane, which was the 500th A380 delivered, which came out a couple weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
And is now in service, doesn't have a business class cabin. They put economy seats up there. Like, super spaced out, it's weird.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm not sure how that works. I think if you... I have to go back and check those pictures. If you space them out that much, I think you actually need the airbag seatbelts.
Really?
So, the airbag seatbelts are for when you hit your head.
Yeah.
And they don't want you to hit your head on a sharp edge or something, or be too far away. One of the advantages, believe it or not, of having seats so close together is that in a crash, when you start getting thrown around, your head hits the seat in front of you so quickly that it doesn't have time to accelerate to move fast enough to cause as much damage to your neck.
Interesting.
How bizarre is that of a rationalization? So when it goes from like 34 inches to 38 inches or to the bulkhead in a first row of a, you know, cabin, that's where you sometimes need to have the airbag seat belt.
Yeah. Interesting. I didn't realize that.
And there's a bit about the Spirit, which we'll talk about in a minute. Got rid of the airbag seatbelts on the new first class seats because of some other changes in the space. In that case, there's no sharp corner because they made the seat back wider, but there's some weird things about that. It may be that if there's nothing in front of you, it's okay, but if it's only if there's a wall a certain distance away that you have to, you know, in a range that you will hit it, that you need the airbag seatbelt, but there's some interesting stuff about those.
So anyway. is that why the airbag seatbelts are on a lot of the suites or...
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're within so many inches of...
Yeah, they don't want you to hit a sidewall or an angled tray coming out or a screen or anything like that.
Gotcha. Okay.
So,
but
usually that or a shoulder belt.
Is there any hope for Iberia to get these seats?
Oh yeah, they'll switch them out eventually.
Eventually. But this plane is running domestic routes only, or?
Well, so it's currently operating within Europe, so Schengen or whatever, not even Schengen, within Europe, because it's somewhere to Heathrow. So if you want to call that domestic, sure. I sort of do sometimes, so it's okay. But I saw on the schedule at one point that they were loaded for international service.
Can you imagine?
And it was Mexico City, Caracas, and maybe one or two other places.
Probably because they just put the tail number into the schedule generator that rotates planes and didn't think about the fact that it's missing business class seats.
Well, it's more than that. They actually, because they have both. So it's a different code. 359 is the aircraft code for the normal 350-900. If you see an aircraft Iberia labeled as 350, it is all economy.
I didn't know that they had that.
Versus 359?
Well, I didn't know that they had an all economy config kind of as a base.
So an airline gets to decide what codes to use. Like, they all use the same ones, but they're allowed to put multiple. So like, United had 772 and 773 and 77W, or could theoretically. Like, there's different things that they play. Delta, I think, used to do 738 and 73M or something like that.
Yeah.
Aeromexico had a 7S8 for some reason, I feel like, which was a weird way to do the 737s, 800s. But basically, the way the database systems work, you kind of have to, if you're going to have different configurations, you should have a different code for it to make it load right.
Yep.
And so, like, I'm looking in December 2022. Mexico to Madrid still has 18, so every other day ish, flights loaded that appear to be on this 350 type, which is the
All economy.
All economy. So,
but that's, I mean, that's interesting to me because they're going to lose 18 flights with potential, you know, premium traffic.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. Looking more so in the month of December, Caracas, Dakar, Heathrow, Mexico City, Milan, and Prague. Wow. You know, it's like between Caracas and Mexico, it's every day. Right, there's 31 of those combined, which would be one a day. And then in the inter, you know, the other half of the day, I guess, or somehow, or would they need two of them? Because those are pretty long flights. There's 13 and seven. There's 20 others scheduled across Dakar, Heathrow, Milan, and Prague. Two or three to nine, depending on the destination. So, would suggest that maybe they think they're getting another plane that's going to be misconfigured like this before.
Wow. Starlux.
Yeah.
Got its first A350, which is, Starlux is the Taiwanese carrier.
Taiwanese startup. They wanted to use this in the United States, so we'll see how that goes. They've now got 321, 330, and 350 families, which is neat. They did actually a fun video of formation flying, not just a rendering. They did it for real, so that's cool.
That's cool, yeah.
And dimmable windows.
Dimmable windows. This is the first time the A350's had dimmable windows.
First Airbus at all, I think.
Does it work the same way, I'm guessing, as the Boeing 787 windows?
Yeah, electro, whatever. Very similar. It's interesting talking with Ingo Vugitzer, who's the VP cabin sales, I think, or something, VP cabin product for Airbus at a conference last week. He was basically saying, you know, we knew this existed, blah, blah, blah. We weren't willing to do it until we found a product that actually worked really well. And he said that this version gets darker, dims faster, is just a much more improved version of the solution. So that's why Airbus was willing to let them install it on the planes.
Fascinating.
Yeah. So Starlux business class will have it. There's also, probably not this week because I didn't prepare for it and it usually doesn't stop me, but we've got a bunch of other stuff instead. We should talk about that A350s are also changing their cabin dimensions.
Really?
Making them a little wider and a little longer, and there's some real interesting stuff that comes out of that. So put that on for next week.
Yeah, we'll put that for next week. I'm now interested in knowing how you make a cabin wider, but okay. Spirit getting new seats again. These people just can't stop buying seats, I guess.
100 new airplanes on order.
Something shiny.
Well, that's sort of was my thought about it, too. I didn't realize they've got 33 new planes coming next year as part of their next 100-plane tranche.
Uh-huh.
And so, yes, they announced new seats 3 years ago. 3 years ago, they switched from the Acro 3 series to the Acro 6 series.
Mm-hmm.
This time around, they're switching to Heiko's, Vista? Okay. Heiko something. And it's, but it's the next sort of round of deliveries is basically Vector. Sorry. I was going to say Vantage, and I know that's a premium seat. So there's the Vector Light and the Vector Premium. But basically, it's, you know, the Acro 6 was for the last round of planes, and they got all of those delivered. It was like 50 or something new planes. It was a lot. But now for the next 100, it's going to be the Heiko Vector seat. They're not going to retrofit the existing. So there's going to be a little bit of, you know, potential confusion there. But it's, they shaved 120 pounds total out of the cabin with the new seating design.
Mm-hmm.
11 ounces per seat, which is a lot. And added padding and added a headrest and made the tray table a little wider. So
in coach. Wow.
It's interesting. I mean, listen, I sat in it for all of 5 minutes, right? And at pitched at 28 inches. My knees still fit just like on the old one. It's a Spirit seat. Like, I probably wouldn't enjoy it nearly as much as on Transcon as I would on the 2 hour flight from Boston to Florida.
Yeah.
2.5 hour flight, whatever that is these days. But
are they doing a lot of Transcons?
They fly a certain amount of Transcons.
Yeah.
More than I would,
more than you would like to experience.
Yeah, or, you know, unless you're in the big front seat.
Yeah, true. And in the big front seat, did they get improvements as well?
They did. So they added. I mentioned earlier they made the back wider. Mm-hmm. So the old one used to have a big gap in the middle.
Okay.
By making the back wider, the seats now touch basically, adds more privacy. It makes it so they don't need the airbag seatbelts. It looks a little more luxurious. They also moved the tray tables to the outboard armrests from the center console. So now when you take your tray table out, you don't have to, like, elbow your seatmate.
Hey, United, we're looking at you.
Yeah. wow, more than I thought. Spirit has just over 1,000 departures longer than 2,000 miles in the month of November.
Wow.
30 a day.
Wow. That is a lot, yeah.
This is oof.
And do their big front seat have, do they have power anywhere on the plane?
No.
Something like that? No.
No. Nice try, buddy.
A man can hope. Yeah.
So again, the Transcon problem. But yeah, it's interesting. I can't believe I have that many.
You're going to have nightmares about this tonight.
Man. But yeah, like Las Vegas and Los Angeles to all sorts of East Coast destinations.
Yeah.
BWI, Newark, Fort Lauderdale, Orlando, Miami, Philadelphia.
I bet they run those as red eyes too.
Sweet. Definitely sleep on that.
Yeah, for sure.
In Pittsburgh. So anyway, yeah, it's, listen, I asked, you know, point blank, why are you changing now? Like, why are you doing this all over again? You have a seat, you liked it, and it's like, you've only got so many planes, like splitting it up again is silly. And basically the answer was, we can save more money, but, you know, push the needle, you know, she said it a little more nicely than that. We wanted to push the needle on sustainability, push the needle on comfort, push the needle on personal space. And, you know, it's not a bad, I don't want to say it's not a bad seat, because, like, obviously it's still going to be a low-cost carrier Spirit Airlines seat, right?
Yep.
But I think it's better than the current one.
Yeah.
They also made all the economy seats a half inch wider.
That's nice.
Yeah. Part of that comes from pushing the window seat into the wall a little extra, which isn't great, but
I think this is, I mean, I get it, right? But I do wonder, right, they're going to save money, but at what cost of differentiation of product? I mean, do their customers just not notice or care when they fly Spirit? Like, I think people flying in the big front seat may care. Like, people who frequently use Spirit and fly in the big front seat may notice a difference and be like, I don't love this plane.
Well, the big front seat got an extra inch of recline, dude.
Well, I'm saying the people who like the new seat,
yeah,
right? And then now they're like, well, wait, why don't the rest of your planes have that?
Yeah, always a risk there. I think it's probably not a substantial enough change to really trigger that.
Yeah.
And over time, right, the oldest of the olds get retired out and the new ones come through, et cetera. I will say, one of the real interesting things I thought, the literature pocket, they put, it's like, it actually seems weirdly like metallic and heavy and rigid for what I would have thought would have been plastic mostly. But it's got little hooks, almost like horns or antlers sticking up that you can put a coat, hang a hook coat on, and notches in it to, you can store your glasses, like hang them while you're sitting there.
Interesting.
So like we're like a couple little, and the, you know, then the magazine, or not magazines, but the safety card and whatever just goes in behind that.
Yeah. Like, right? Weird creature comforts.
But like surprisingly nice things that a lot of other US airlines don't do.
Yeah.
Also I have the ignominious honor being the first person to forget my sunglasses on the new Spirit Airlines seats. I took them off while I was in the seat, like testing it and doing the interview and whatnot, and walked out, and then was in Long Beach, California, and walked outside. I was like, it is blinding out here and I definitely don't have my sunglasses anymore, and walked back and they were still sitting there. So
lovely.
it is now the Seth Miller's Memorial sunglasses left behind eyeglass holder slot. But we're working on rebranding it, but I think I'm negotiating that with it.
That's a little bit of, it's a bit of a mouthful.
Yeah, story of my life.
Commute Air is getting E-175s.
That's the hope. They have applied to the DOT to add it to their operating certificate. They're 145s only.
Yep.
And they need permission, apparently. So.
And where is this? Where are they mostly flying out of Dulles?
They currently fly Dulles, Houston, and Denver. It's where all the 145s are.
Gotcha. Okay.
I think Denver. The goal is to, you know, depending on what you believe, it's just for charter and training purposes today. But no, they're theoretically going to add them into the operation.
And where would they get E-175s?
Mesa.
Okay. Makes sense, I guess.
Yeah. I've also been led to believe that they are restructuring their ownership, but that is unclear. So the other thing to note here is Commute Air is the only 145 operator for United Airlines. And that deal came in July 2020 and killed off ExpressJet,
yep,
which then tried to become AHA, and that also failed again. And part of the ExpressJet challenge was ExpressJet was a 145 operator that was trying to add 175s also. So that's an interesting little bit to sort of add into the mix. But overall, just, you know, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out and if they can make that transition. We know United is trying to get rid of 50-seaters. It sucks that they're going to get rid of 45s instead of CRJ-200s.
Yeah, exactly. Keep the Satan chariot around. Get rid of the 145s. Hey, Foz.
Hello.
Our good friend who's a CRJ hater. is annoyed they don't fly. He's based in New Jersey. They don't fly him out of Newark anymore, so he's stuck at 777 lifetime flights on the 145s. Never gonna make his 1,000 goal.
Is that your goal?
Hit
is
that Foz's.
Oh yeah. Our friend is not gonna get his goal.
He lamented that.
God, that should never be anyone's goal.
But at least he's not aiming for CR2s. You know,
I'd said he's a little crazy, but we all are. So, you know, roll with it.
Capital One lounges. Tell me about these. They're coming. LaGuardia, I think, is in the plans.
Yeah, on one of the overpasses.
No, like the
air bridges that
the air
are
bridges, the walkways over the yeah. Evacuees.
Yeah.
I don't know what you want to call it.
I saw some photos.
The photos are nice enough.
Yeah, it's gonna have like an outdoor deck, I guess, that you can use for the summertime, I guess. I don't know if it'll be open in the winter. But it looks nice. Yeah.
I mean, are we go jumping the shark on lounges?
I'm looking forward to the Barclays built card lounge access card at some point soon.
Okay.
I just think,
I mean, Fonz, I sort of see what you're saying though, right? Like too many different credit card lounges, how do they all support it?
Yeah, well, and then a bunch of these have like, you know, they're like the Chase Club, Sapphire lounges are supposed to be priority pass as well. Maybe it's like.
Yeah, so the Chase ones are sort of, they're run by the club, which is like a brand club operator. I'm actually bummed. They've got all the signage up and I saw the entryway at Boston, but it's not open yet. Their Hong Kong one just opened because, you know, that's a great place to start running lounge service today.
Well, you know, you don't need to do a soft launch. Just open it up.
Open it up, see if anyone actually bothers to show up.
Yeah.
The Boston one should open soon enough, I hope. I'd like to see it. But yeah, you could say, is there enough demand for all these different lounges? And then you look at like the line to get into Sky Clubs some days. And the answer is
Sky Clubs, United Clubs, everywhere, really.
I don't see people complaining about the United Club lines as much.
Where are we seeing lines for the United Club?
I saw one when I was in Newark.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait. Club. Was it a line waiting for people to get in, or just because the automated gates weren't working and the agents just sit there and watch?
I don't know. I didn't go in, so I was like, I'm not waiting.
So that is what the line at Newark. It is not because there's no space. It's because literally the automated gates are probably the crappiest gates out there. They don't scan barcodes very easily, and there will be five agents literally sitting there just standing.
Well, I mean, what else, what do you expect them to do, Fuzz? What is your expectation? That they get up and work?
Or they have a scanner at the desk, just let people up there.
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think I've seen the Centurion lounges pretty backed up, too.
Yeah, the Centurion lounges are, but part of this is just because people want a free meal.
Yeah.
Right, the Delta lounges I don't under. I mean, at that point, you're better off in the...
Yeah, Jesus. I mean, I get the need. I think we've talked about this before. Like, I go into a lounge typically if I need help with something, and I don't want to get on the phone and try and call and fight that line. I'll go to the lounge. But lately, I just haven't been going into the lounge at all.
Have you used the sort of digital agent thing?
No.
You know what I'm talking about? Like, you
yeah,
the QR code?
Yeah. I'm not a... Yeah, no thanks. That's even worse, I think.
Yeah.
you thought dealing with, you know, United Twitter was bad.
Yeah.
Well, for us, we would probably end up getting B.
Cool. Ma'am, your ticket is canceled.
But we're still in Guam.
Yeah,
for those of you who don't know, that's a throat. B was the one who screwed us on our Guam reroute, right, on the Island Hopper, right?
No. Oh. B was the one that Steve and I had the San Francisco Munich, or...
Oh,
yeah. Was it San Francisco Munich?
I think so.
And, like, refused to let us make changes, like...
So that was that business class mistake fare.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, yeah, you can't do that. And we're like, what are you talking about?
I've decided that you have a mistake first. I'm not going to honor the rules.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of Hong Kong, though, Faust, thanks for mentioning that. Cathay going to start overflying Russia again?
Yeah, I just heard that today.
Why?
Saves a lot of money.
Apparently, there are some of the flights, particularly going into the winter season with the winter winds. Without the winter winds, it's been adding 3 hours.
Wow.
For like JFK Hong.
Yeah. It's amazing. I mean, Singapore makes it work.
Singapore goes east, don't they?
Yeah, mostly. Yeah, I mean, yeah. They've been going east to JFK and Newark. Yeah, kind of like up and over Japan, and then they'll cut over and come down.
It's the westbound used to go the polar route, right? You'd just sort of like take the jet stream east up the coast of Canada, and then turn north before you got to Greenland, and go up over the top and down through Russia and China.
Yeah.
Now they just keep going east and keep riding the jet stream, but it's not great.
Right.
This is one of the loopholes in the sanctions. Emirates, the Middle Eastern carriers have been doing it all along, and it works really nicely for them. It gives them a competitive advantage now while paying into Russia, so it's a little weird.
Yep. Alaska, Air Canada, and IAG have a bunch of orders.
Yeah, it was a busy week last week. It's almost like an air show.
52 plus 104 maxes for Alaska?
Yeah. That's if I remember correctly, the 52 were converting the existing options, but it's still the largest single, yes, we're buying planes from Boeing that Alaska's ever done.
Wow.
And they added another 104 options for the back half of the decade. If they execute all of them, they'll have like 250 new planes by 2030.
Well, I think the other part of that is, right, that also means they've also said they're getting rid of the last of the Airbuses by next year.
Yeah. And I think that's sort of always in the plan, but yeah.
The 321?
Yep. Yeah. Not always in the plan, but that had been, I think when they announced the original earlier this year, max order, that was also part of it.
Those are all probably 4 or 5 years old, so they must have a lot of value in them.
They're leases.
Are they all leases? I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
They are. I think they're older.
They got to be old because they came with the merger.
Yeah, they're Virgin planes, so, I mean, I think they're probably 7 years old at least.
Well, some of them got delivered after, I thought.
One did, for sure. Okay. Yeah. And then 15 220s for Air Canada.
Yeah, 15 more. That was an option execution. They had, I think it brings them up to 60.
Wow.
Maybe. Wow. 45 to 60 or something like that. But they had 60 total options, but they have 31 today. There's a few more expected than this last 15. So, yeah, it's going to be a nice fleet of 220s for them.
Yeah, that's a lot of planes. And then IAG is buying 37 Neos.
Yeah, they have open orders for both Neo and Max. And in the European style, the board of directors, they announce it, and then it has to go back and get approved by the shareholders.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it was the Max order was confirmed, and they expanded the Neo order as part of their confirmation.
Yeah, interesting.
So, okay. A lot more planes coming in the next few years, assuming, you know, Airbus and Boeing can actually build and deliver them.
That's a high bar.
It is these days, unfortunately.
And Norwegian is establishing a base in Riga. This is a joke, right?
No. Air Baltic has issued a statement saying, "We are very excited to see the benefits of our presence in Riga to help redevelop this airport bear fruit and see additional services," or something silly like that.
That's a subtle burn. Like,
yeah. No, I mean, Norwegian's going to show up and going to run its playbook, which is, I don't say entirely different, but definitely has some differences from Air Baltic showing it in like Tampere, Finland, and adding its base there.
Yeah.
So, right, Norwegian is 100% leisure traffic. Air Baltic tries to do business. Norwegian is 100% no connections going straight to holiday destinations. Air Baltic has a few routes and a few frequencies where they sell you onward connections, mostly on Air France KLM, but occasionally other airlines too. So,
no blockchain bullshit with Norwegian yet.
Not yet.
Yeah. It's coming soon.
they're building it.
Yeah. And then United is going to start using Jaguars for transfers.
They're ground transfers when you're running late and they ferry you across their apron.
Mm-hmm.
They're switching to all electric vehicles from Jaguar.
Has this happened to anyone? Has any of us gotten a transfer?
I once got a transfer at Dulles.
Really? I didn't know that. I've never gotten one, and I've been late many times.
It wasn't even because I was late. That was the weird thing. I had plenty of time, but it must have been a slow night at Dulles.
let's surprise and delight a 1K. All electric. So do you think the CEO got Mr. Kirby got a Jaguar out of this or something?
No, we'll see. They were using Mercedes, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So expect now your emails, you know, for cars that I'm never going to buy to now be Jaguars instead of Mercedes.
Yeah. China Southern 737 Max. What's the story here? Did it fly?
It did not. There's a whole bunch of hoopla last week about, oh, it's loaded into the schedule. A few of them were started to get cleaned up, apparently, like unsealed and starting to do maintenance work and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And then China Southern actually loaded it into the schedule for over the weekend. Again, going back to the IATA schedule change, whatever. It did not fly, at least not on Saturday. Who knows?
I don't think any of us are surprised.
Saturday, right? Sunday. No, I'm not surprised at all. I would have been very surprised if it actually slipped.
The 50th anniversary of the A300.
Yeah. First flight.
That happened 50 years ago today on the 30th.
It was yesterday. It was over the weekend.
Okay, gotcha. Interesting. I haven't. I think I only have a few flights on the A300. Not as many as I thought. Maybe the A310s. I have a few more. The Continental flew A310s, right?
Well, Continental threw 300s, and Delta had 310s.
Okay, so maybe I have more 300 flights than I think.
American had some 300s. AB6 was the aircraft code for that. The Airbus A300-600 series. They flew those, American flew those a lot on JFK Miami.
Oh, interesting. And to Latin America, I'm guessing?
Down
to the
Latin
island?
Yeah.
Fast stuff. So. And then you mentioned it a little bit earlier, Cathay's going to overfly China, Russia again. That starts November 1st.
Yeah.
Wow. I think that's a show, gentlemen. Got some bonus topics, though. We're going to talk about cabotage in Mexico, Canada's beaver heritage problem, which I'm really looking forward to that. And Eastern is looking to China again, and this, as Seth mentioned this earlier in the show, so stick around for that. And we're going to talk a little bit about Virgin Atlantic and did we?
I can't remember.
But we'll talk about it. If you're a Patreon subscriber, you'll hear more about that one. So stick around. Canada's beaver.
Canada, that works good again. That one or the beaver problem?
Yeah, the beaver problem is. I think that's going to suck people in right there. I can feel the people signing up for Patreon right now.
You know, if you go Ottawa, there's a concept called beaver tail, which is like a dessert pastry.
Yeah, they're delicious.
They are actually pretty damn bad.
Foss with the random Jeopardy knowledge. Oh, man. So if you're not a Patreon subscriber, you can do that if you want to hear the bonus topics. If not, we enjoy you being a part of the show, and send us any questions or comments that you may have, and we'll talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.
Bye-bye.